Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Hashtag Health, where I'll continue to interview Dr. Sarita about the fentanyl crisis. In today's episode, we'll build upon our discussion from the first episode and look at the factors that are playing into this crisis. This will definitely be an interesting episode as we discuss pertinent social issues tied to the use of fentanyl, like housing instability and stigma, and also the solutions to this major public health crisis. Let's get right into it.
We kind of touched upon housing instability. Do you mind elaborating upon that a bit more and how that plays into the fentanyl crisis?
Absolutely. So, you know, over COVID, we had a lot of crises come on during the pandemic, but really it stripped bare how much housing insecurity is present in Canada and in Ontario. And it's only gotten worse. Certainly, you know, in London, we've gone from a vacancy rate of 4% down to less than 1%. We're leading Ontario and maybe even Canada in terms of rent increases. We see 30% rent increases from, you know, year over year here in London. And so that's leading, you know, when we combine that with inflation and housing prices and lack of housing stock and low income wage earners, it's leading to a lot of people not being able to afford the housing that is available. And right now that means a lot of folks land on the street. And so this is where our intersection starts. I think I mentioned one of your earlier questions that people living outside have all kinds of pain. And so I want you to imagine that you'd been homeless for 2 years. You're sleeping in a tent in Victoria Park here in London, and you've been sleeping on the ground, you know, snow, sleet, rain, you know, 40 degree summer weather. And after 2 years, you can imagine your body would really hurt just from being outside, let alone the injuries that come from being outside, like frostbite, and, you know, the loss of digits related to that infection. So people have so much reason for physical pain. And so they turn to what is available to them, and what is available to them to treat that pain is fentanyl. And then we also think about emotional pain. You know, heroin, for as long as it's been around, has been called a warm hug. And that's because heroin, you know, it really simulates family connections, friend connections, community connections. It grabs onto the same parts of our brain. So again, if you're living in a tent in Victoria Park here in London, and no one seems to really care if you get housing, you're always being moved along, you have garbage thrown at you by community members, you're stepped over by community members, you're made to feel like far below what a human being should feel, well, then you want to treat your emotional pain as well. And so what is available to make you forget what's happening to you? What is available to give you that warm hug? Again, it's fentanyl.
So could you describe how stigma has contributed to the crisis? How has that, I guess, perpetuated the crisis to this day?
Yeah, I think there's still a widespread idea that people who use fentanyl, it was a choice to use fentanyl, and they got themselves into this problem, and they should have to get themselves out. And this is a, you know, a personal responsibility crisis. But, you know, listening, you know, thinking about your last question, it's just not true. It's a life circumstance cause. It's you know, poverty, it's marginalization. And so stigma doesn't allow people to get out of that trap. And so stigma affects the public's perception of why people are using fentanyl and that personal choice, like I said, but public perception and stigma related to who uses fentanyl, which, again, the widespread perception is it's people with mental illness and so forth, lead to stigma in terms of solutions. And what I mean by that is you'll hear, unfortunately, more and more lately about things like involuntary treatment, which means putting people into a hospital against their will, detoxing them against their will, forcing them to take abstinence-based treatment. You'll hear about that. You'll hear about rehab centers. You'll hear about, you know, more mental health funding. And those second two are important. But they miss the boat entirely, right? Mental health is not causing fentanyl use. And, you know, pouring money into more mental health supports is not going to solve fentanyl use either. So the stigma is really, is creating barriers, both in seeking treatment and the treatment that's available.
There's many people who do feel inclined to want to help people struggling with opioid addiction. Do you have any suggestions on for the average citizen on how they can help alleviate the crisis?
And first, we just talked about language. I'm going to ask, you know, your listeners and the public to shift that language away from opioid crisis, away from fentanyl crisis, and to call it what it really is, which is a drug poisoning crisis, which is a drug policy crisis. This is what's really happening. And by shifting that language, the public's understanding can shift with that, and the solutions we can imagine shift with that. And what we're expecting of our politicians who actually have the power to implement any of these solutions, hopefully that shifts their mindset as well. So first thing is language. Second, you know, it's a pretty basic thing, but carry some naloxone, right? Naloxone is public access. You can pick it up for free at any pharmacy. It's super easy to use. You know, there's a package insert. There's lots of YouTube videos. It's incredibly easy to save a life with naloxone. So I'd really encourage people to carry in that naloxone. And I think the third thing when you're saying what can, you know, the average person do is not look away, right? So I think individually, we have limited power to change this crisis. Collectively, we need to do that. But individually, not stepping over the person on the sidewalk, you know, not casting aside your gaze, saying hello to people in the park, you know, sharing food or sharing resources with people who are outside. That's going to help bring back some of that human connection, which is driving some of this fentanyl use, as we talked about, right? And I think that's something that any of your listeners, that it costs people no money, it costs them very little effort, and it's a big change that can help.
Yeah, I really like the example you gave about the language, but how calling it not a fentanyl crisis, but a drug poisoning crisis.
When we call it a poisoning crisis or a drug policy crisis, that puts it firmly back, you know, at the feet of people who can solve this, because we know how to get ourselves out of this, whether that's illegal regulated supply, whether that's safe supply for everybody. We know solutions here. We need our policymakers and our politicians to have the courage to act on those solutions. So yes, at the very bedrock foundation, this is a drug policy crisis or a lack of courage crisis.
Has the government gone involved in trying to help people who use fentanyl so far?
I mean, we're lucky here in London at the Intercommunity Health Center. We were one of a few pilot sites that were funded by Health Canada to support the development of safe supply, safer opioid supply. And so we've been, you know, grateful that the Liberal government has invested in that, not just in us, but like I said, sites across Canada. And really, you know, there is movement within the government to recognize what this really is, right, around drug policy. And so some of the results that come out of that are, you know, bills around decriminalization. So the government does deserve some credit for what they've done so far, but it's nowhere near enough, right? So here in London alone, we know there are at least 6,000 injection drug users. And this is based on 2017 data from our feasibility study for our consumption sites. We know it's more. And we have 300 people on Health Canada funded safer supply program here at the health center. And we can't see any more because we are completely at capacity, right? And so while we're very grateful for the funding for our 300 folks, we need government to recognize it is an absolute drop in the bucket, an absolute drop. And so we need sustainable funding for programs like ours, but investment in, you know, expanding across the country to every community that needs it. These should not be pilot programs. None of these interventions should be pilots that are researched every 4 years, right? Like, drug users are one of the most over-researched groups of humans in the entire world. We need to say, we need to make a big decision, and we need to move forward with these solutions.
So to end off on a positive note, what makes you hopeful about the future of this battle against opioid use?
I think, you know, particularly here in London, we've seen a real pivot in how all layers of our community and, you know, our municipal politicians are thinking about homelessness. And the way that they're rethinking homelessness around really person-centered interventions, you know, really quick and nimble and acute responses to the housing crisis makes me hopeful about the drug policy crisis as well. Because if we can do that, if we can pivot quickly over 6 months and completely redesign our system and our response to housing instability, then it shows that we can do it for the drug policy crisis. We just need to decide that it's important enough for us to do that. So it sounds like I'm kind of really, you know, qualifying my hope there, but it really shows me that we can do it if we want to.
So just to clarify, it sounds like we do know what we need to do, and I guess the steps to help alleviate this opioid crisis are pretty evident. It's just upon deciding and acting upon those at this point.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, yes. And when I say self-evident, I mean this shouldn't just remain in a medicalized model. Safe supply is important. Methadone and buprenorphine are very important. Abstinence-based treatments for those who want that, that's very appropriate. But that's all medicalized. That's all with physicians or other medical professionals as gatekeepers. And so while all of that needs to be invested in, all of it is solutions, all of it's important, it's still never going to reach everybody. It's just not possible. And so a real solution to this is legalizing opioids and regulating them, just like we do with liquor, with alcohol at the LCBO here in Ontario. The LCBO, it makes sure that when you buy alcohol, you know the company that you bought it from, you know what type of alcohol you're buying, you know what percentage that alcohol is, and you know usually your own personal response to that, right? So it's a regulated supply that keeps everybody safer, gets away from the moonshine problems of the 1920s. The LCBO or you know, alcohol regulation, it doesn't mean that people don't become addicted to alcohol. It doesn't mean that they don't drink too much and crash their car. It doesn't mean that they don't go on to liver cirrhosis. But it does mean that we don't have alcohol poisoning deaths, right? So there's a lot, there can be pushback to legalization and regulation that all, you know, everybody's going to keep using drugs, but we already do that. We already do that for alcohol. And so we need to look to that example so that we can make opioids safer for the vast majority of people who choose to consume them.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Hashtag Health. Starting in episode one, we discuss what fentanyl is and has emerged in Ontario, followed by today's episode where we brought to light the social issues that are enabling fentanyl use, and finally, the next steps in this crisis. The Hashtag Health team would like to thank Dr. Sarita for taking time out of her schedule to join us on our podcast and share her knowledge on the fentanyl crisis, or better yet, this drug policy crisis in Ontario. We hope to have not only educated our listeners about this epidemic in Canada, but to have also inspired you to become part of the solution. And remember, if you or someone you know is struggling with addiction or the misuse of opioids, there is help available. Please reach out to your healthcare provider, a local addiction treatment center, or harm reduction organization for support. My name is Edai, and we will see you next time on Hashtag Health.